Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today my guest is John Gusty. First announcements. Our website is forbiddenknowledge.news. This is the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network, where we feature some of your favorite podcasts. You can always get new episodes of Forbidden Knowledge News on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. We put clips on YouTube that also link to the full episode. Our social media presence is on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Finally, I want to thank all of you for your extraordinary support over the years. It is because of all of you that we are able to keep going. We are going to be starting production again on the Forbidden documentary, hopefully later this year, but we need your help. Currently, Forbidden Knowledge News is not sponsored by anyone. We do have a couple of affiliates that work off of a commission basis, but no full-time sponsorships. We are completely self-funded. And if you're in the podcasting business, you know that this is not a lucrative career. We make enough to survive, and I am extremely grateful and blessed for that. But if you would like to help with production, or maybe just buy us a coffee, anything is greatly appreciated. We have a couple links in the description to do that, or you can go to supportfkn.com. Other ways you can help, you can sign up on Rockfin. That is where you get our premium content. You also get all the premium content from every creator on Rockfin. That's rockfin.com/FKN+, or click the link in the description. Also, if you want an early release copy of Corey Hughes' new book, A Warning from History, just go to buymeacoffee.com/JFKbook or click that link. Today I want to welcome John Gusty. After 30 years in the entertainment industry working behind the curtain for some of music's biggest names, he turned his attention to health and wellness in an effort to help his wife heal from what was originally diagnosed as multiple sclerosis. He soon realized that the same deceit and profit motive that plagued the entertainment media was even worse inside the medical industrial complex. As a devout agorist and champion of individuality, he now devotes his time to producing content that celebrates the spirit of sovereignty in all aspects of life. John, welcome. How you doing?
Buddy, man. I'm doing good, man. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. This is going to be great. Really? We're going to be discussing your book, The Red Pill Revolution, and we're going to also get into some of your personal experiences and insights into the deceit and corruption and media, medical industry. education, as well as many other aspects of what we perceive to be reality. But this is your first time on. Before we get into anything, I'd love to hear more about yourself, your background, and what led you to write the book.
All right. Actually, it's the convergence of two very different life paths. I grew up in Tempe, Arizona, riding skateboards, loving punk rock, and embracing my middle finger, and just from an early age, just always gravitated towards individuality. Didn't quite know why or quite how to organize it, but I was always drawn in that direction. If there's 100 people going in that way, that direction, I'm going to be skeptical before I join them. I'll either stay put or go this way just because. As I got older, I just never lost the love of punk rock and music in general, and played in bands and went through several record deals, and then got a little older, and wife and kids came into the picture, and stopped trying to be a rock star and started working for them, helped start a couple record labels, and then started working directly for some artists in the management capacity, management inner circles. And it was during the latter part of my music career, when I was working with management, when we were, bumping up against, high level entertainment, I think is it's all kind of interconnected. It's, politics, corporate stuff, entertainment, sports, it all, they're all interconnected. It's all corporate profiteering. I mean, everybody's got a corporate profit motive. All the big record labels, all the big movie companies, all the big sports teams, all the big medical brands, they all work in tandem. And in many cases, they're owned by the same parent company. And when I started to see, I guess I always saw it, I guess I just started to understand just how orchestrated and put together the entertainment industry is. I mean, with rare has it ever been that there are artists that are just 100% in control of what they do. Once you sign a commercial agreement with a larger corporate entity, you are essentially an employee. You are a product, and you do what you're told, when you're told, how you're told, where you're told. And that, I think a lot of people can wrap their heads around that in the music industry. I mean, anybody that's even touched the music industry even slightly would know of tales of, performers and bands and stuff being, being manipulated by management and by their labels to maybe sing songs they didn't want to sing or wear clothes they didn't want to wear, that type of stuff. And so it's not hard for people to wrap their heads around that. But I think it's a little harder for people to wrap their heads around just how orchestrated the rest of the entertainment and media industry is. There's people who, they'll watch cable news and they'll think that what they're seeing on TV is real, and it's just as produced as any sitcom or any other show. People reading scripts, staying at, when you're on TV of any kind, you have to be mindful of timelines. So nobody's freestyling anything. Everything is thought out. There are commercial breaks. And I guess I just got a real firsthand trial by fire life experience of just how manipulated the entire entertainment and infotainment, I'll throw the news and media companies in there too, how manipulated and put together and scripted those industries are, and just got to see it at the highest levels. One of the more interesting, I think when I really flipped was when I can't and I won't name names because I did in fact sign NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, and I have to be mindful that was an agreement that I agreed to. But I saw a couple of different instances firsthand of people, human beings, portraying multiple public-facing personalities. What I mean, let's just for the sake of this conversation, you've got a guy named Tim. That's his human name, Tim. But publicly, he's known as a celebrity. He's also known as another celebrity that is a complete separate entity. So you've got one human, real human, playing multiple celebrities that the public think are two separate people. And again, I don't think anybody, it's not hard for people to wrap their heads around, you know, there's, you know, take any actor, you know, Brad Pitt or whatever. I mean, we all know that Brad Pitt has played multiple characters in movies. I don't think anybody really thinks that he is Tyler Durden of Fight Club. You know, just apply that same concept to everything else. I mean, you have, again, when you sign with a big corporate entertainment brand, you are an employee and you are a performer, and you will perform per whatever agreement you signed up for. And so you've got, when I saw with my own eyes, when I saw people playing multiple roles, but the public thought differently. The public was under the understanding that, you know, this is, you know, celebrity A and celebrity B, and it's not played by the same person. That it always kind of sat a little wrong with me, but it's entertainment. So, okay, whatever. And people don't get on Brad Pitt for playing multiple characters. Why should we get on Tim for playing multiple characters in my vague example? So, but when that spilled over, when I saw that spilling over into the world of politics and the world of news and stuff like that, when you actually had these personalities that were essentially fake personalities, they were fictitious personalities being played by real humans, but the personality, the public facing personality, is a fictitious character, but the public thinks it's a real character. That real character, or that fake character that they think is real, is delivering what they think is news or information that people are making life decisions on. That never sat well with me. So while this is happening, while this is my life is happening, my wife Dawn of 20 plus years, when we first met, we met in the music industry. She was diagnosed with what she was told at the time was multiple sclerosis, and she has since been confined to an electric wheelchair. She hasn't taken a step on her own in probably close to 15 years, maybe. And I dived headfirst into trying to figure out what was wrong with her. I had no previous experience with the medical industrial complex, been a fairly healthy person my whole life, never been hospitals or anything like that. So I didn't really have any point of reference. But when I dove in, and I've always been a, you know, creative content creator my entire life. And so when I dive into something, I just start digging and asking questions. I want to figure it out. And I quickly came to realize that the medical industrial complex is just as scripted and produced and deceptive as the entertainment industry and all of that. And it really was a, you ask what drove me and my fellow co-authors to write that book. One of those co-authors is a guy by the name of Jeremy Ayres, and he's actually my wife's doctor and has been for many, many years. He's over in the UK, and we're old lost souls, I guess. We instantly became the best of friends, and ideologically pretty aligned, both incredibly skeptical. I don't like the word skeptical. Why is using discrimination? Discrimination is a good quality. That's another word that's been totally turned into something that it's not. It's good to use discrimination, to have discriminating qualities about your decision making. You don't just make decisions flippantly. And Jeremy and I just clicked. And there was no rabbit hole that went untouched between the two of us. And we knew we were going to put a book together, but we started putting a book together in the fourth quarter of 2019, right around the time Event 201 happened. which is still on YouTube, I believe. And we literally were writing that book. So Event 201, for those of you that don't know, those were the, you know, world influencers that came together in October of 2019, sat around a table and pretty much mapped out what exactly took place 4 months later with the whole scamdemic narrative. I mean, right down to the T. They pretty much said what now they did it under the guise of a planned exercise. But I mean, it just happened to happen exactly as they said it was going to happen. And that was going on as we were writing the book. So the book became like this. I don't know. It was a weird thing to watch happen, because it wasn't like we were prophets or anything. We were just listening to what they said that they were going to do. And then they did it. And we're writing a book during that and commenting on it. If you go to the redpillrevolution.com under the exclusives tab, we've got, I think we did constant live commentary, but at least once every month while all of this was going on, and just trying to keep people aware that this was a narrative. This was a campaign, if you will. And the book actually ended up being a field guide to just how do you navigate a psychological operation, which is really what it was, on such a mass scale, when so many around us, friends, family, associates, were buying into it. I mean, it was a weird. Maybe it's my punk rock heritage or whatever, but if you'd have told me or any of my peers, I would imagine you or any of your peers, back up 10 years ago even, and say, hey, there's going to come a time when politicians and corporations are going to pretty much strongly suggest that you take these injections, which they won't tell you the ingredients, and you'll have to sign away any liability that is so that they can't be sued should you get sick or die. Would anyone have considered taking that deal? Like would anyone have done that? And the answer obviously is no. I mean, we all would have gone, that's ridiculous. I'd never do that. But thankfully, the majority of us did not, contrary to popular narrative. But there was enough of us that did. And it was a weird time to be putting a book together. The book was originally just going to be how to sanely navigate through all the deception and misinformation too. But you know, we've been fed a lot of misinformation from birth, and how to sanely navigate. I mean, that's what the book was going to be about before this happened, and then we actually were writing the book as it was happening, on such a grand scale. And so it was an interesting time to pull it together. There's a lot of cool pop references, song lyrics and stuff throughout the book, a lot of memes, a lot of pictures. So it's not a hard read, but yeah, that's how it came to be, was really just.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The original intention of two skeptical guys and three of their, you know, their buddies wanting to talk about these narratives and the deception that already existed. And we just, I don't know, it was kind of lucky that we kind of started writing it when we did, because man, did we get a palette upon which to paint. So
right
as,
on, man. Yeah. Now, were you, when you started to understand everything and how things work behind the scene and the corruption, were you surprised how deep everything went? I mean, when you look at media corruption and how it's connected to everything, the deeper you look, oh, it's connected to the CIA. The deeper you look, oh, there's occult ritualistic aspects to this. And that's where it turns people away, because it gets too crazy for some people and their cognitive dissonance kicks in and they're like, I'm not even going to look at that stuff. Occult rituals, Satanism, human sacrifice. I don't know about any of that. And that's where people just turn around and stop looking. And I think that it's important that we don't turn away and we keep going further, because that's where the deepest truth lies. Did you ever look into any of those real deep aspects?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it actually, to me, to know, it's not a matter of thinking, to know how quote unquote deep it goes is actually makes it easier for me to not live my life so in such an angry state. I know that there are only two groups of people. There is what I call the control group, and those are people that, and we all know people like this who almost find comfort in being controlled. You could look at any number of man woman relationships, or even, you know, whatever man man or woman woman relationships that we have in our lives, and you know, we all have examples of like that controlling spouse, that shitty boyfriend, or that you know, that manipulative girlfriend or wife or whatever, who is trying to control. Some people like to be controlled. They find comfort in it. And also in that same group are people who like to control. And I don't, and they're all too willing to feed off of each other. The people that want to be controlled, there's just as many people want to control, and they feed off each other. So there's this group over here. And then there's the rest of us who, I mean, I don't wake up in the morning wanting to control anybody. You know, I like to be in control of what I'm doing, but I don't want to control you. I mean, my wife and I have one of the most beautiful marriages anyone could ever ask for. And I don't control her. She doesn't control me. It's a completely consensual partnership. And, you know, to know that there's always going to be people that want to control. And there's always going to be people that want to be controlled. And when, like I said, it's almost comforting to break it down that simple, is I can look around and just go, well, that is a person that wants to be controlled. That is a person that is controlling. And when you are controlling people, or when you want to control people, and when that's your goal, you manipulation and deception, those are your major tools. I mean, that's how you do it. That's how you control. You control people through manipulation, deception, and fear. So to know how deep it goes, almost, like I said, it brings me a little bit of comfort and sanity to know it's really no different than any other abusive relationship. The abusive relationships are always complicated. They always involve deception, manipulation, and fear. And all of that stuff, it's just another abusive relationship. And it's kind of up to us, the individuals, to recognize when we're in an abusive relationship. You know, I mean, I know that I've been in an abusive relationship with the corporate structure most of my life. I mean, when there is nobody walking the earth right now, over the age of 30, that can honestly look me in the eyes and say that we've lived one single day not knowing inherently that politicians and corporations lie, deceive, manipulate, cheat, all of that stuff. It's a meme. It's part of our like pop culture. I mean, we've all known that. We've never lived a day when any of us have gone, oh, politicians and corporations are completely honest and have my best interest in mind. They don't. And so why would we Why would any of us, again, why would anyone over 30 look at the corporate structure? Why would any of us look at politicians or corporations and expect anything other than an abusive relationship? We have a lifetime. We were born into it. And we have example upon example upon example. But again, there are those people that like abusive relationships. And so I think if there is any goal, and I think we probably all, you know, people like yourself, myself, and other content creators, I think maybe at the end of the day, if we can just help one other person get out of an abusive relationship on any level, then it's, you know, and that, you know, call it waking up, call it, you know, whatever, peeling away a layer of the onion, whatever. There's all kinds of neat little catchphrases for it, but if we can just get one more person to just get out of an abusive relationship, then this type of stuff is worth it. And that's certainly why I do it. I don't do it to sell books. I mean, it's nice to sell a book here and there, but that's not. And in fact, when somebody buys a book from us, I encourage them, when you're done, share it, man, pass it on. It's like a good song. You know, it's like when you hear a good song, you want to pass it on to your friends and go, man, listen to this. So it's not about selling books and making money. It's more about, like, man, letting other people know that it isn't so, like, you don't have to think about it as like, it's so deep, it's too much for me, I can't handle it, you know, everything. And just know, man, that's an abusive relationship and you just need to get out of it. And thankfully, one of the biggest powers that we all have, the biggest superpowers we all have, is just the power to say no. It's okay to say no. I mean, saying no has been demonized, especially the last couple of years. You say no to something, and it's like, you're non-compliant. You know, you're being difficult. Well, it's like, well, you're fucking right, I am. I mean, I'll take being non-compliant and difficult over making bad decisions any day. And I'm not just going to make a decision because, you know, my, you know, freaking fondle slab phone or screen is telling me to do something that I inherently know is wrong. And plus, if it's coming out of my screen, I know it's coming from the corporate structure that I inherently know I can't trust. Never have. There's never been a day any of us have ever been able to honestly say we trust the corporate structure or politicians.
100%, man. I want to get into something important you mentioned earlier about the manipulation of words and phrases from not only the media, but pop culture, we've been fed through social media and everything else. I mean, words like racist, fascist, sexist, gender, anti-Semite. I mean, just all these things that have been twisted and thrown out there to demonize a certain group of people and make it easier to either cancel them or cut them off from society because they're being labeled as these things that I just said, or a conspiracy theorist, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, words are powerful. And, you know, there's a reason why they call it spelling. I mean, think about that word, spelling. You know, words are very, very powerful. There are any number of ideologies. You don't even have to get into, you know, man-made religions, just ideologies in general, that, like, the genesis of everything is you can speak things into existence. I mean, so words are very powerful, whether we all want to recognize it or not, or whether that sounds new agey or wacky, whatever. But I mean, you can look, I mean, if people need scientific proof on how powerful words are, Emoto, famous Japanese scientist, did a lot of research photographing and videoing water molecules. And it's interesting. You look at some of his work, and, you know, he had a very famous experiment that was done in, it probably still is in Japanese elementary schools to this day, where take two jars of that have water and rice in them, and in one jar that they would isolate it over here in this part of the room, and the other jar in the other part of the room, and every day the kids would go to jar A and they would speak positive to it, just positive stuff, maybe sing, whatever it was, is positivity. And then they'd go over to the other one, and it was all just like shouting at it and being like negative, and that each and every time that one would mold. Okay. And Emoto, again, taking looking at his photographs and seeing like what happens to a water molecule when you are playing, you know, aggressive music versus when you're playing something that is, you know, real soothing, like an Indian flute or something. I mean, you see the molecule just goes chaotic and then it comes back together and forms these beautiful geometric patterns. And it's like we are basically walking water bags. And so if you're just getting negative and contrast positive, you vibes kind of coming, your intentions coming your way, it's going to literally affect you on the molecular level. And
I think not only that, but our understanding of what these words mean, like who really understands that's throwing around the word fascist? Do 90% of these people even understand what fascism is whenever they're saying that? Probably not, along with a lot of these other terms that have been weaponized to, like I said, either shun or discriminate or cancel somebody.
Look at the word racism. I mean, honestly, do you know? I mean, let's take that word literally, because again, words have meanings and words are powerful. Do you know anybody in your life that is racist? And I mean racist, like hates a race of people to the extent that you know about it. I mean, they verbalized it to you. You know, they've said, "Christopher, I hate Asians," or whatever. You know, and do you know anybody? Like, and if you do, if your answer is yes, how many of those people do you know?
Now, I have to be honest. I grew up in the heart of South Louisiana, and I can tell you what, in the past 20 years, no, I sure don't. But whenever I was growing up, they might have been a couple that expressed something similar to that along those ways. But that it was, like you said, very, very few far between. And this was in the 80s, you know, early to mid 80s. So things have changed a lot. And maybe those individuals that expressed that back then may not express the same thing now. I don't know. But it is very rare, like you said.
And I think if we're being honest, most of that crap that we can all reference, it's actually bigotry. It's not racism. It's, you know, somebody making some stupid racial, what we call a racial slur or whatever. How is that any different than going dumb bitch or freaking cracker or, you know, stupid jock or, you know, slut? Or I mean, it's all the same. It's all the same thing. That's bigotry, and that's not racism. And so most people don't know that many racist people, if ever have encountered one. Do you know, I mean, how many people do you know that are homophobic? Like, how many people? I graduated high school in 83, so I was around pre-Boy George. I watched, you know, prior to Boy George. I mean, most people's androgynous reference was David Bowie. Okay, maybe Freddie Mercury a little bit, but nobody cared in the early 80s that people were gay. Nobody cared. It wasn't that big of a deal. I know my peers didn't. I mean, there was you found out somebody was gay. It was like, oh, okay, well, that's, you know, that's Larry and he's gay.
Good for them.
Whatever. It was no big deal. Flash forward to today, and like literally, people are leading with their sexuality. It's like, yeah. I mean, it's people are, there's a large portion of people that are just obsessed with sexuality. Mm-hmm. And so have we really progressed, you know? But back to my original point, do you know anybody that is truly homophobic, that like hates homosexuals and wants to see them eliminated, or will not even be in a room, you know, with a homosexual? How many people do you know like that for real? Because they're not that big of issues. Like, they're not. It's like most people don't care if someone is gay. Most people, you know, don't care about anyone's heritage. I mean, not in a negative way. We never as a people ever really have. Even some of the narratives, you know, like I've lived in the South almost 26 years. I live just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. I used to live in Athens, Georgia. I lived in Charleston, South Carolina. I've lived in the deep, deep South. And I'll be honest with you, I've never lived in a place that is more open-minded than the South. So I've always taken issue with this whole thing, you know, the South is racist. That has not been my life experience at all. And I haven't lived like this sheltered experience either. When I lived in Athens, Georgia, I was literally living in the ghetto. You know, I mean, I was one of the few white people around, and I got nothing but love, honestly. Like, if I could surround myself with overweight Southern Black women for the rest of my life, it'd be amazing. They're some of the best grandma figures I've ever known. You know what I mean? It's like, so I've got, I don't know, these things, these words that have been weaponized and these problems associated with them. Again, it goes back to narratives. It's not been my life experience that these are real problems. They're problems that are artificially created for control means. I mean, you need these narratives. You need to keep that's why people are, you know, why isn't anything ever done about this? It's the corporate structure's job to keep these narratives going. That's what gives them an audience.
It's classic divide and conquer across the board. It's not only with language, but everything. They want us to keep us on complete opposite sides of the spectrum. Even when you look at politics right now, it is so extreme on both sides. Like, you can't be moderate anymore, or you're going to get kicked in the nuts by one of the other sides, or you're going to get hate from one of the other sides because you're somewhere in the middle and you don't agree with the craziness on the right or the left. So that's what we're dealing with as well. They want everybody to be extremists.
I even think that whole right-left paradigm is bogus. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm not a statist. You know, I'm not religious at all. But if I was religious, statism is not a religion that I would gravitate to. And when I say statism, I mean the religion of statism. Here in the States, it would be the worship of the District of Columbia, the Church of the Red and the Blue. You know, and I don't go to that church. I don't sit on the red side of the church or the blue side of the church. To me, there aren't even two sides. It's you're a statist or you're not a statist. And for those of you that have trouble with that term, statist, it's quite simply this: do you worship commercial corporate entities and take your cues from them and have them lord over you and run your life? And I definitely do not. So I am not a statist. I don't attend that church. I don't begrudge anyone that does. At least I didn't up until the last couple of years, because I'll be honest with you, I have never had a Muslim come up to me and get in my face about not being Muslim. I've never had a Buddhist come up. I've never had a Mormon come up. I've never had any religion, and that includes Christianity. And all of its sects. I've never had anyone give me a hard time about not being part of their gang, but I've had a bunch of statists give me crap about not complying with their religion and their religious doctrine. And case in point, the events of 2020 forward. You know, I mean, how many statists were shaming others for not believing in their religious doctrine and you know, wearing their headpieces? You know, I mean, again, I've never had a Muslim get on me for not wearing, you know, a headdress. But you know, I mean, look at how many statists got on non-statists for not wearing the face diaper. You know, I mean, Muslims have their reason for their little headpiece, you know, and statists had their reason. But unlike Muslims who don't push that on others, at least it's never been my life experience, because I've never had a Muslim push that on me, and I don't know anyone that has, quite honestly. But there's been a lot of statists that have pushed their beliefs and their religious doctrines on to me, and I would dare say most of us. And you know, and I think that's another thing is I think people who are statists have a hard time accepting that is a religion. I mean, it's got all the earmarks of a religion. You've got belief in a higher power and authority. It requires submission and surrender to that higher power or authority. You've got the desire to be led. It involves hope and faith. It involves, that hope and faith gives you comfort and security. And there's even funny robes and ceremonies and chants and sacred texts and all of that. I mean, it's every part of religion that just like any other religion. And so, but I think a lot of statists have a hard time accepting that they're in a religion. And people who are, I think that's probably the difference between a religion and a cult. The people who take part in a religion usually know it. The people who are in cults don't know it. And I would say most statists probably are, they definitely behave like cult members to me. They are religiously glued to their doctrine that is being fed to them through, you know, corporate cable news or their fondle slabs or whatever screen of choice they use. And they don't know any other doctrine outside what's fed to them through their corporate sources.
Something parallel to this phenomenon is the religion of science and technology now, just blindly believing what our doctors and the pharmaceutical industry and scientists are telling us about diseases and the nature of disease and the nature of everything that comes out of our mainstream science is now questionable because of the deceit we've already been exposed to everything since, especially since 2020, right?
Oh, yeah, man. And a kind of a little like trick or rule of thumb that I started using years ago, and man, it really was helpful to keep myself sane during the silliness of 2020, is when you are encountering anything, when you're encountering beer, I always will in my mind go, I know I don't want corporate beer, I want a good indie beer. You know, when I'm encountering music, I know I don't want corporate music, I want good indie music. And so apply that same filter, if you will, to science and everything else. There's a big difference between corporate science and non-corporate science. You know, I mean, you walk into a group of actual scientists, and I mean actual scientists, not scientists that are bought and paid for by the corporate structure. I mean real scientists. And you mentioned the term virology, and they'll laugh at you because virology is a theory. It's never been proven, ever. You know, you look up, anyone can get on Wikipedia right now and look up germ theory. I mean, it's a theory. There's a reason why that second word is theory. It has not been proven. And the corporate scientists, the paid actors reading their scripts and cue cards are pushing the germ theory as fact. And it's not. I mean, and that's Antoine Bechamp and Louis Pasteur that's been an argument that they started in the mid 1800s, and it's still going on to this day, where the non-corporate scientists are saying, man, if these invisible things you're calling viruses, show me that they exist. And to this day, I don't know of any proof that's ever been given that any of these things that are being called viruses actually exist. We don't have pictures of them. Yeah, there's videos out there showing little squiggly things going through, you know, some sort of microscope slide. But, you know, you won't see a corporate scientist and a non-corporate scientist together on the same screen looking at the same slide and having an honest debate about what they see. You'll just see a corporate scientist going, this right here is the, you know, Pikachu virus named after the Pokemon character. Well, you know, whatever, you know, I've seen so much shit like that, where you've got somebody with some letters after their name because they went to some corporate university and they paid to be certified and they apparently possess all this knowledge, and they're literally identifying things on screens, calling them scientifically things that they're just not. And if you happen to know, I got a, you know, 20 plus years of interfacing with the medical industrial complex, I've got very, very, very knowledgeable and skilled, seasoned scientific health and wellness / medical friends and associates that could, you know, you would never get somebody like them and Fauci together in the same room because Fauci is an actor, and Fauci would not know what to say. I mean, we can still go, I believe this is still on YouTube to this day, you know, Carrie Mullis, the inventor of the PCR method, he's no longer with us. He died suddenly before it was fashionable in 2019. He invented the PCR method, And he, I mean, there's video. I mean, I've got a documentary I did that's also at theredpillrevolution.com. That you see footage of him. He's looking in the camera and saying, Fauci, because at the time, Fauci was using the PCR method to for the whole AIDS scam. You know, the AIDS scam was just a beta test of this whole corona thing. And he was saying then, he was like, you know, I invented this method. It's not a test. It's a molecular amplification method. It doesn't test for anything. It doesn't prove the existence or the presence of anything. It's just an amplification method. And he's using it to manipulate facts and figures. And most people aren't going to dig that much to figure it out. They're just going to see some guy in a white coat with glasses looking all official on their red or blue branded, you know, cable news channel going, this is fact and blah, blah, blah. And they're just going to take it as fact. And Kary Mullis, the inventor of the PCR method, has said on film, anyone can go out there and look for it. It's still there out there to this day, that method is not a test. And our entire culture worldwide based the existence of this supposed virus on the results of those quote unquote tests that weren't, by the admission of the guy who invented the method, weren't tests. And I mean, the narrative was so weak and so poorly put together, but most people aren't going to do any digging, and they're just going to turn on Fox or CNN or whatever and they're going to hear these narratives, and they're going to react accordingly, and they're going to do what they're told, because again, they're in an abusive relationship, and people who are in an abusive relationship don't see what the rest of us see. The rest of us who aren't in that relationship go, oh, like as we say here in the South, oh, bless your heart, you know.
Yeah, the most nefarious aspect of this that most people refuse to even acknowledge or look at is there is an underlying or overlying eugenics. There's a sterilization and depopulation agenda at play. And they've even told us this. They've told us through the World Economic Forum and all their elite type of globalist functions that they get together and talk about how they're going to rule the world. They tell us that they want depopulation, yeah, that they want aspects of eugenics to happen across the globe. So this is something that people refuse to look at as well.
Eugenics is probably one of the most passionate ideologies, dare I say, religions out there. People who are into eugenics are into it. That is what guides their entire existence. And that's where all the blood stuff comes from. That's where all the depopulation stuff comes from. That's where all if you are not, those of you listening or watching, if you are not familiar with the whole topic of eugenics, it would be time well spent for you to familiarize yourself with what that ideology is, who is involved, and you're going to see a lot of once you are aware of it, you will look very differently at some of these mainstream narratives and the players that are pushing these narratives, and you'll be able to go, yeah, that guy or that woman, total eugenicist. And powerful stuff, and they believe it. Even if you don't believe it, they do, and that's what they base. That they are as passionate about their beliefs as you might be about yours.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's hard. That's the hardest part to get people to understand is, you know, with this depopulation, the occult aspects, possible Satanism, is whether you believe in that shit or not, they're into it. And they believe in it for sure. So that's a terrifying aspect, man.
And there's now, a reason. Go ahead. I was just going to say, there's a reason why they keep doing it, because it works for them. So again, whether we believe it or not, is irrelevant. They do, and it is clearly working for them, because they've been doing it for hundreds and hundreds of years, and they will continue to do it until they are stopped.
Yeah, 100%. Now, I want to get into something you touch on in the book that I think is really important to talk about, is the difference between commercial and private in our everyday lives, difference between lawful and legal, the uniform commercial code, things like this. I don't think people understand enough about.
Yeah, well, the Universal Commercial Code, the UCC, that is... it's exactly what it says it is. It's the Universal Commercial keyword commercial, code. And I think a lot of normal, everyday people who are just living their lives and going about their business would be surprised to find out how few laws there actually are. There's no law. There's no speed limit laws. There's no law against cannabis. There's no, there are very few laws, but there's a whole bunch of code. And that is a fundamental understanding that that most people don't get, is the difference between law and code. And the big difference is code is always commercial. Again, it's the universal commercial code, the UCC. And so it's only applicable in commercial situations. If you're not in a commercial situation, no UCC code applies to you. And another basic understanding that a lot of people don't grasp is your average person is involved in a lot more commercial situations than they think they are. In fact, it starts at birth with, if you have been issued a birth certificate, a certificate of any kind is a commercial instrument. It is. I mean, that is an indisputable fact. Certification is always commercial. So why would they create a commercial piece of documentation for a human life? Why would they do that? Why is there any need to do that? Well, I mean, I'm sure you know the reason, but for those that don't, it gets called a lot of names, straw man or whatever, but there are actually two entities. We all have two entities. We have our human self, and then we have our commercial entity self. And most people don't realize that there are two. And those of us that do have to go to great lengths to retain ownership of your commercial self, because if you haven't claimed it, most hospitals, in fact, I think all hospitals since the 70s are foundling hospitals. The basic process goes like this. You're born, a certificate is created. Most, if not all, parents don't understand what they're doing when they allow that certificate to become created. Every state is different, but at some point that commercial entity is not claimed by the owners, because the owners don't know to claim it. The parents don't know to claim it. And so then the state takes over. It's just abandoned property and off to the races. And that now there is a commercial entity out there that is your name, and it is not owned by you, and it is bought and sold and used as collateral. And I mean, it is a commercial commodity. And that is the crux of what we call our economy is based on that kind of financial paperwork, commercial shenanigans.
I want to get into something that we were touching on before we started talking. And you grew up in the music industry, in the punk rock realms, as did I. And we were discussing how a lot of the icons that we grew up with and thought were living by what they were preaching and singing about, anti-authority, anti-war, anti-government, all these things that punk rock was supposed to be about. Well, now they're making you get vaxxes before you go see them play. Some of them are selling masks as merchandise, just completely going along with these agendas and not at all representing the punk rock icons that they once were trying to pose as. And that's pretty incredible. And I want to get your thoughts on entertainment across the board over the past, 10, 20 years, the way you see it's going. I mean, I don't really listen to much modern music anymore, unless, somebody turns me on to a good, like, independent rock band or something like that. There's a lot of stuff that I can't stand. It gives me just an annoyed feeling to listen to a lot of the pop music, whatever the hell mumble rap is. Like, there's just stuff that I find completely awful, and I can't even be in the same room when it's played. But the younger generation seem to swear by it and be brainwashed completely by it.
Yeah, well, you're just too old. You just don't understand.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, when you, the first part of that segment as you were speaking, I was totally going through my mind. Yeah, what up, Dave Grohl? You big fucking corporate sellout piece of shit. Yeah. I mean, seriously. I mean, there's a reason why we refer to your band as the Foo Fighters. You know, I mean, he was one of the first motherfuckers that demanded that if you were going to go see his band play, you had to be jabbed. If you'd have taken, I would love to go back in time and do an Ebenezer Scrooge on that motherfucker, right? On Dave Grohl, and go, you know what? You know, let's go back, you know, 20 years and let's talk to a 20-year-old Dave Grohl and go, you know what, in 20 years, you know, you think you're a little punk rock independent badass right now, but in 20 years, you're going to be shilling for corporate fucking pharmaceutical companies, you know, and I don't know, that guy disappoints me he's right up there with the Sony soy boys now known as Rage with the Machine.
Right. Yeah.
Holy fuck, those guys. You know, I mean, first of all, I think we were all misled. They've always been corporate. I mean, Rage Against the Machine has never been an indie band. Although they never claimed to be, but let's remember they were always on Sony. And again, another one of those totally playing along with the corporate pharmaceutical narrative. You know, who'd have thought? You know, so there's. I think counterculture in general, like, was one of the big casualties of the whole scandemic rollout. So much of the counterculture just flipped and became compliant corporate slaves, just little compliant corporate slaves doing whatever the politicians and the corporations told them to do. And a lot of it has to do with a lot of those guys, unbeknownst to us, the fans, a lot of those guys are under contract by these big corporate entities. And, you know, it's probably a mixture of, you know, there were those that probably didn't want to go along with it, but were told to, at risk of, you know, having their income shut off. But I don't know, there was a lot of counterculture that was, you know, look at Jello Biafra, the Dead Kennedys. I mean, talk about a flip flop, you know, I mean, does that guy even listen to some of his early records and some of the words that came out of his mouth? He's literally become what he once claimed to hate. And
look at how much of this counterculture is actually coming from entities like the CIA. They've been involved with shaping culture for decades and decades. And to think that that would be any different now behind our modern pop culture and the music that they're putting out there for us to listen to is some kind of propaganda. If we think that's not still happening, we've got to be crazy. And I'm sure it's on a completely new level now. And the amount of control they have over celebrities and musicians is probably pretty incredible these days.
Are you familiar with Dave McGowan, the author Dave McGowan? He's no longer with us, but yeah. You know, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon is probably one of his best known books.
Yeah.
For those of you not familiar with that, really, really amazing, well-documented, well-researched piece of work where he completely goes into the Laurel Canyon scene of the mid-60s into the early 70s. There was just an unusual amount of mega talent that was coming out of this small area, which incidentally had a military CIA base right there. All of the people connected with that scene were either CIA or military connected. It was either intelligence or military connections. I mean, the most egregious would be Jim Morrison of the Doors. I mean, he was literally, while he was being groomed, I mean, this is a guy who self-admittedly never played an instrument, never had interest in music, just almost overnight just happened to have all of these songs. Like, how did he write these songs? Well, you know, I mean, he never explained it. But just overnight, he's being groomed to be the the counterculture anti-war individual, while his father, Stephen Morrison, is literally starting the Vietnam War through the Gulf of Tonkin hoax. You know? And I mean, there's in Dave's book, there's a picture of a young Jim Morrison standing there on the bow of a ship with his father, you know? And that photo is not too far removed from, you know, flash forward another year or so, and he had his long hair and leather pants and was, you know, but that whole, I guess the value of that book and that whole topic is that entire scene was manipulated. And that was mid-60s into early 70s. If they were doing it then, of course, it has always been the case. I mean, I can look back now and see how the 90s, the entire 90s, all that alternative, that whole scene, it was all so manipulated. And you see, look at today, whenever there's any big, you know, I don't know, social posturing cause, you've got, you know, Eddie Vedder's always going to be there and Henry Rollins is always going to be there. I mean, you have like these, you know, and the ones that didn't want to be part of that are no longer with us. You know, like Chris Cornell or, you know, Chester from Linkin Park, and mm-hmm. the people who are secretly speaking out in the background are now gone. They've you know, Michael Hutchins from NXS and another one. I mean, they're, you know, it's funny, the people that don't comply seem to have accidents or get diseases and are no longer with us.
I have hope that people are shifting their consciousness and that they're onto the corruption, especially after everything that's happened the past few years. People are starting to wake up. We've seen this a lot, and I'm intrigued to see where the entertainment industry is going to go. People don't want to see the woke crap that's coming out right now. They in entertainment in Hollywood, it really is not even about the money they're making anymore. It's not about entertainment. Well, they're not. Yeah, it's just about whatever agenda that is they want them to push out and put into the culture, into the consciousness of the people. So I'm interested to see, because I think a lot of people do want they want change in entertainment. They want real entertainment. They want truth media. A lot of more people are listening to things like podcasts, and they're just sick of all the fakery that's been put out there.
Yeah. And I think it's really encouraging. I mean, you know, I've got two boys. My youngest is 17. My oldest is 25. And I just live in a community, and I know a lot of people around me. And I see the generation from like 14 on down, and they just, that's where my hope is, because they are so, I mean, you were born into a skeptical scenario. Can you imagine, like, I mean, again, I've never lived a day knowing that I could trust any of this stuff. And if we're all honest with ourselves, none of us can. But can you imagine kids today? Can you imagine being a kid today? All, like, you don't trust anything. You have no faith in anything. And that can be both good and bad. But where I see the good is they're not buying, like, they're not buying any of this crap. It doesn't matter what CNN or Fox News or Facebook or Twitter or any of that shit. They don't care. That's all old people stuff. And so I think that it's a natural cycle. We will cycle through. It's people of my generation and older that are some of them are causing it, and a number of them are playing along and just believing it. But I think that the younger generations are not. I don't think they know what to believe. But where I see hope in that is they don't trust anything. They trust things even less than I trusted them, or maybe you trusted them. I mean, we saw glimmers of hope. You know, I mean, I at least was fooled by Rage Against the Machine at the time, you know, but like none of these kids today, like nobody really thinks that the Island Boys are for real, or nobody thinks that Lil Pump or you know, any of these, everyone just kind of sees it for what it is. It's all narcissism and exhibitionism, and you know, I mean, if there's a good song or something attached to it, they'll listen. But I just don't think that the the media has the grip on the young kids as much as they think that they do. They've got a much bigger grip on the 40 and up crowd. Because you look, most people 40 and up go to any restaurant, man. They're all on their phones. They're glued to their phones. It is not uncommon now. First of all, it's not uncommon now. Can you believe that phones are? It's normal for the price point of a phone to be over $1,000. $1,000 for a freaking phone, and nobody blinks at that anymore. People are buying, you know, smart appliances. I mean, why would you need a refrigerator that's connected to anything other than the wall socket? You know, I mean, just plug it in and it's supposed to get cold. But you can't even buy a car anymore without, like, you'd have to go out of your way to buy a car that was stripped of all of the track and trace biometric measurement devices. You know, what if you just want a car? Yeah, you don't want any of that stuff. You have to go out of your way to get one or strip it down. I don't know. I think there's hope in the younger generation. They're not as hooked as, you know, the over 40 crowd is.
Right on. Well, let's close on this while we're in the realms of hope and possible solutions for the future. I know that we are never going to get it from anyone else outside ourselves. We're never going to have a savior character that's going to come along and solve all our problems for us. We're going to have to do this ourselves, and people need to realize it. What do you think some of the things that we're going to have to do individually and collectively to shift out of this situation?
I don't think that there's any other option other than we've all been born into a culture of dependency, and we need to not be dependent on third parties for things. I mean, how many of us can actually go get a glass of water without a corporate third party entity involved? I mean, a lot of people can't get their own water. It literally falls from the sky, springs from the ground, and most of us, I'm not, but most of us are purchasing their water from a commercial entity. So why are we, that's the most, I mean, we're depending upon who you want to argue with, we're 70, 80% water. It's literally the most important aspect of our literal life. And why are we not taught from birth? First thing, here's how you get and gather and store water. You know, that should be one of the first things we learn how to do. And it's not. I mean, most people, I bet you there are, if there's anybody listening here that makes over $100,000 a year and considers yourself successful, can you get your own water, or are you still buying it from somebody else? Yeah. I would say that if the answer is you're still buying it from somebody else, and you've got some work to do, you're not as successful as you might think you are. So we need to learn how to get water for ourselves, how to provide shelter for ourselves, how to provide food for ourselves, how to provide water for ourselves, and how to work together as communities to, you know, if somebody needs, does everyone need to buy a shovel? Or, you know, if I've got a shovel, if you don't have a shovel and I do, why don't I just loan you my shovel? And then now we both have the use of a shovel, you know, and just extrapolate that out to everything. I mean, if we just become more non-dependent, and I know that this sounds like a total setup, but if any of you are interested, go to the redpillrevolution.com/guide, and you can download an anti-dependency guide. There's no sales pitch here. This is just, it's a bunch of put together. These are actual usable things that anyone can do to take back a little more control in their life. And it touches on a lot of things. It touches on water, light, EMF, you know, electrosmog, grounding, healthcare, sourcing of goods and services, physical versus digital, media. We do something on commercial versus private, and then it ends with consent, which I think consent is probably one of the biggest topics of them all. I mean, you don't have to be in an abusive relationship. A good, healthy relationship is one that you consented to, that the other people involved in that relationship also consented to, and you're both getting, both sides are getting value out of it. And if we can all get those abusive relationships out of our life and become more independent instead of dependent, then that's the only way forward. Because the only reason why we're dependent on any of this stuff is because we were born into it, and we were corralled into it, we were conditioned into it, we were programmed into it. And it doesn't have to be that way. It's a very non-natural construct, and we just need to get out of it. And the only way to do it is to do it.
Yeah. Well said, John. Thank you so much. Everyone, go pick up the book, Red Pill Revolution. I'll have all John's links in the description. And just before you go, let them know if there's anything else that they can look for you on, like social media, your website, all the good stuff.
Well, we don't do a whole lot of social media because I don't want you guys spending your time on FedBook or Twitter or any of that stuff. But if you are interested in important, we go to theredpillrevolution.com. We curate a lot of interesting news stories that we think are important and need to be archived. And so when they're deleted elsewhere, you can still find them at our website, because it's our website and no one will take our website down except for me. And there's a lot of just good exclusive content there. We hope you enjoy it. Just try to enjoy the website. Read the book if you're interested. If you do buy the book, pass it on when you're done. And like I said, just there's no other way forward other than to just do these things. We need to learn how to say no more, and we need to learn how to be more independent.
100%. John, thank you so much. This was fantastic. We'll definitely have to speak again in the future.
Anytime, brother. You say when.
Right on. Until next time, everyone have an excellent evening. We will talk again tomorrow. See y'all then. Right.